This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.
Hello, everybody. Welcome once again to another edition of Recovery Radio. Each and every Saturday, you'll find us here. This time, we talk about the disease of addiction and most especially the road to recovery. Recovery Radio is sponsored by Retreat, Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. We will have more about them, of course, coming up in the program. First of all, let me apologize for the way I sound. I'm fighting the first of what I hope won't be many colds this season, so you'll forgive the way I sound a little bit here today. It is fair to say, I think, that any serious disease affects an entire family. Nowhere is that more obvious or unique than when the disease of addiction visits a family. And that's what we're going to talk about, the disease of addiction and the collateral damage that can be considerable on the people surrounding, supporting, loving, trying to figure out the person who is suffering from substance abuse. That's the topic. It's no coincidence. It's certainly a true statement that disease is a family affair. And that's what we're going to be talking about today on Recovery Radio. To that end, we welcome Brad Peffer with us. It's the first time on Brad's program. He is active at Retreat with their parent support group. We will have more on that straight ahead. He's here to tell us about his up-close and unfortunately personal experience with the disease of addiction. Brad Peffer, thanks for joining us on Recovery Radio.
Thank you.
Did I get that right? There's a lot of collateral damage, right?
Yes, there is.
Or there can be anyway.
Yes, there can be throughout the, not your normal home, but outside that home as well.
All right, so tell us about, you're not in recovery. This involves your wife's substance abuse problems, correct?
Correct.
Tell us that story.
I met my wife about 13 years ago, almost 14. When we first met, we met at a party. A friend introduced us, and our lives involved going out and drinking and having a good time with friends and seeing bands and going to dinners and those types of things. And over the years, I started to notice a pattern of the drinking getting more and more excessive over time. And probably somewhere in 5 to 6 years into our marriage, my wife went to her first rehab. She had a car accident. Thank goodness no one was killed. She was the only one in the accident. But her blood alcohol level at that point in time was a 0.38. They kept her in the hospital a couple days till she got out. And that's the first time I really realized there was a true problem.
First time you realized that something had to be done, but you said you noticed that her drinking, which began in a typically social fashion, suddenly began to outstrip that. What were some of the signs of that for people that are wondering, you know, am I being too alarmed, or what did you see that you thought was odd?
Some of the things I saw was the change in personality. That was one of the big things. How quickly she could turn anger wise, one minute being happy and the life of the party, and the next minute just being completely angry.
So it wasn't necessarily the consumption that was changing, just you noticed that when she had a few drinks, she could change on a dime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the consumption, you bring that up, the consumption started. Started seeing more signs of, you know, we were the typical couple. We'd have a 24-pack or a 30-pack in the refrigerator in the garage, and was for the weekend, and I'd go out for the weekend to, after a hard week at work, and next thing I know, there's nothing left. And by the end of the weekend, we'd restock, and there'd be nothing left again.
Were there teenagers in the house at the time, or how old were the kids?
Kids at that time ranged anywhere from 4 to about 12 years old.
Okay, so I mean, certainly you weren't thinking that the kids were doing all this. Mm-hmm. At some point, you must say to honey, who's drinking all this beer?
At one point, I did. I did confront my wife about where's it all going. And after that happened, it slowed down. Took me years later to find out that she would drink it and then restock it.
It never occurred to you that might be going on because you didn't view it as a problem.
No, I didn't. Yeah. I didn't view her drinking as a problem at that point.
How did she react to you saying, where's all the beer going? Did she get defensive or...
Yeah, she got defensive. Always had great excuses of where it went. Friends stopped over. We had a few drinks. I worked a lot of hours at the beginning of our marriage. I'd start at 8 in the morning, get home sometimes at 9 at night in the industry I was in. And friends would stop by. Oh, my girlfriend stopped over. Oh, people from work stopped over.
And you were buying. This seemed perfectly reasonable.
Yeah, it seemed reasonable. Neighbors came across the street. It seemed all reasonable at that point in time.
Yeah. This is a 10-year period. Your wife had been married before. I guess both of you had been married prior to this?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you have any knowledge of her problem drinking before you met, or was this all brand new to you?
All brand new.
Yeah.
No issue with it. I've never dealt with this before.
So it was the accident, the automobile accident. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, you were worried she's drinking too much.
Mm-hmm.
Did you confront her about that before the accident?
We did. I did confront her a couple times with that, not only myself, my family. We asked her if there's an issue going on and do we need to get help in that way. And it just sort of went over like a lead balloon.
Yeah, when you say the family got involved, who did you involve? This is almost an intervention, it sounds like you're talking about.
Not really an intervention, just maybe a little bit of an eye-opening.
Right.
You know, my parents stepped in a little bit, her sister.
Her sister?
Yeah.
Were you reaching out to them saying, look, I'm a little worried?
I was.
Yeah.
I was.
Yeah.
You know, that it's because you would see the increase.
What kind of a drinker were you during this period of time? Did you have any problems at all?
No, I was a casual drinker.
Right.
You know, guy to have a few beers on the weekend until I got mad at her. When she would get drunk at some point in time and get mad, then I'd go out and finish the beer in the refrigerator just so she couldn't have it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
So this initial moment, because a lot of people listening who may have fears, it takes a long time to act on these fears. I'm sure there was a long period of time where you were telling yourself, maybe I'm making this up. Maybe it's not as bad. You were trying to delaying this moment, right?
I was. After a long period of time, if I look back on it now, yes, there was that time where I didn't want to confront that issue.
So it takes something like an automobile accident, and she's under the influence.
Yes.
Yeah. And then what happens?
Then we sent her to her first rehab.
Was it difficult? Was she a reluctant participant, or was this part of the legal proceedings that she had to go, or how did that work?
At that point, there was no legal proceeding involved.
Because she was the only one involved.
She was the only one involved. So she ended up coming home from the hospital. She knew at that point in time that there had to be something done. So she was okay with going.
She was worried about dying or hurting someone else, right?
Well, she was, yeah. Yeah, losing her kids. I mean, that was her biggest fear, was losing her kids.
And that was a reality because you told her that was what she was placing at risk?
I told her, I said, you know, if we keep this up and you're drinking and driving, the risk of you losing your kids is very high.
Brad, had it gotten to a very contentious point before the accident? Were there arguments about her drinking? Was she in deep denial? What was the stress level prior to the accident?
Stress level was high. There were arguments about it. We usually didn't fight unless she was actively drinking. That's when we fought the most, argued the most, and that's what we argued about was the drinking.
Did you come home and would you find her inebriated, passed out? What was the situation around the house?
There were times that I would come home and she would be very intoxicated, not knowing what she was doing. Dinners burn on the stove.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're thinking the house can burn down here.
Yep. Passed out on the couch in the living room. Passed out in the, you know, we'd find her in places.
And there's a 4-year-old and a 12-year-old. There's small children in the house.
My kids were not with us full time. They were with their mom most of the time. Mm-hmm. But her two children at that time at 10 and 12 would be coming and going from the home, yes.
Brad, what was your... characterize your level of empathy during all this period of time. For people who are going, all they can feel is anger now. Explain how you were feeling.
Very angry.
Angry.
Right? I was angry all the time. I found that anger to carry over into other aspects of my life, my work, my family, you know, my brothers, my mom and dad, her family. you always feel on edge when this is going on.
Were members of your family saying, this is killing you, this is messing you up? Were they giving you that heads up?
They were. They were very, very supportive of me in this time and of my wife at that time, too, to try and get her help. But they saw the difference in me.
So as I said at the beginning of the program, a serious disease visits a family, whether it's cancer or something serious. There's obviously a family effect. Everybody feels that to a certain extent. The difference here, the difference with this disease is that if your loved one, heaven forbid, gets cancer, you're not going to catch it. The disease is not going to eat your body away. You're not going to get tumors. You're going to get stress and all that, but you're not going to actually be attacked by the disease. This is what goes on, isn't it? This disease, even though you're not abusing substances, is really attacking you as a healthy, sober person, right?
It does. When she was actively drinking early on, like I said, the stress level was so high. I was that guy that never called in to sick to work, didn't show up for work, was always at work. And as this was going on, my attendance suffered. Thank goodness I had a very good boss at that time. He sort of understood at that time what was going on. So it affected every aspect of my life. I mean, and I think that was the biggest thing I had to learn over time. Is how this was a disease. This wasn't something I could tell her, just pull up your bootstraps and go back to work.
Yeah, although that was the inclination to say that, right? Suck it up here.
Yes. Yeah.
Why would you be doing this to us?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Correct.
Yeah, exactly. Our guest is Brad Pepper. Brad has for 10 years during his marriage struggled as the head of the household with a loved one, his wife in this case, who was abusing alcohol. And he is now very active in the support groups at Retreat that deal with the issue of the effects of the disease of addiction on the family. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. Steve Martorano with you. We're here every week. We talk about the disease of addiction. And I say this an awful lot, that all cliches are true. That's how they become cliches, if you think about it. And one thing you will hear, an article of faith when talking about the disease of addiction, is that it is the family disease. In unique ways, I think. So unique that when the family needs to confront what's going on, they need special skills and unique ideas on how to deal with a loved one who's abusing drugs or alcohol. To that end, we've welcomed Brad Pepper with us. Brad, for 10 years, he and his wife struggled with this. His wife was abusing alcohol to the detriment of every single thing in their lives. He's now very active in the parental support group at Retreat, and we're going to find out more about that straight ahead. So, Brad, in the 10-year period when your wife is abusing alcohol, that midway period she has the automobile accident, that's when push has come to shove now, and you guys convince her she needs help. This is dangerous. Tell us about that first effort.
The first time we put her into rehab in Maryland, in a rehab there. She did her 28 days, got the typical phone call at 5 to 6 days that she wanted to come home. She's better now. She wants to come home.
Incidentally, you didn't know much about this disease prior to any of this, did you?
No.
It's not in your life. You didn't know anybody. Most people are exactly where you were. You're just not ready for this. So you, like everybody else, is thinking, well, great, 28 days, great.
It's over. Yeah, I'm thinking 28 days, she's going to come home. She's going to be healthy. You know, we're going to be able to resume some type of normal life.
Well, tell me about that period of time when she's away. It must feel like a great burden has been lifted. All of your expectations are probably unrealistic, but pleasant. Is that pretty much what's going on?
Yeah, when she was away, I mean, there was a tough road of you know, now I am the only parent in the home dealing with getting kids to soccer practice, dealing with getting dinners done. But the stress that was in the home from the abuse or the disease was calm. The house was calm.
Yeah, it's interesting because, again, most people wouldn't know this. So the terror and anger and danger of the situation when your wife was in the house and drinking is gone, which is a big relief. But in its place is all these other additional responsibilities that you have to take on. And you can't complain about them, right?
No.
You just have to do them.
You just have to do them.
And you pay a price for that, whether you're aware of it or not, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you pay a big price in the fact it's not only just the stress on the family why that person is gone, but the financial stress. You know, a lot of the times you're down to one income at that point in time. Bills don't stop rolling in. You got to figure a way out, and you got to tighten your belt. But that stress was a lot easier to deal with than the stress of the disease being in the home.
Yeah. What was going on with the kids?
The kids were anxious quite a bit of time. They felt the same way I did. Mom's gone for 28 days. She's getting the help she needs. She's going to come home and be a lot better.
They were pretty aware of what the problem was prior to going into rehab, right?
Yeah, they were aware. They were seeing the things that were going on, and what needed to change.
This is terribly sexist. I admit to that right up front. But it has always seemed to me that in the family dynamic, and tell me if I'm wrong, when it's mom who's trying to get healthy and mom who's admitting she's sick and needs help, I think that's a little heavier burden on the family. You know the expression, when mom's not happy, nobody's happy. Dads are supposed to tough it out and, you know, Is that the way it is?
It is. I mean, I say this often in group. You know, us as men, we don't need help. We're tough. We're going to put everything. We don't need any type of help. And you realize when that person is gone that is really running the household, how much help you really need.
Exactly. So she comes back in 28 days, and how? And obviously there was a relapse. How long did it take for the relapse to occur?
She came back for 28 days. She put about 15 days together to 20 days together, and she drank again. And this went on for the next on and off for the next year to a year and a half that she couldn't put time together.
Yeah. And what was going on between you and her? This must ratchet up all the negative stuff, right?
It did. It really ratcheted up that stress level again. It got stressful. No matter where we were at, what we were doing, you were always afraid if we were going to a soccer game for the kids, was she going to be able to make it the whole way through the game?
Was she embarrassing herself and the kids and you in public?
Not so like much in public, but it at home in the neighborhood, yes. There was some embarrassing situations
right,
at that point
right.
in time.
So wasn't much of a secret anymore?
No.
You know, when somebody comes back from rehab, I mean, you're taking all those other burdens, the financial stuff, and now she's back and – and it's not working. Did you blame her? In your view, did she waste that opportunity, the 28 days? How did you feel about that?
I did. I felt like I wish I would have known more before she went in, because I did feel like, why aren't you using what they taught you?
I thought you were supposed to get better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody expects this disease to arrive. And one of the cruelest things about it, as you've been saying, is that you're flying blind. Was there anybody in your life you could turn to and say, what's going on? Somebody who had experience, or were you all alone in this thing?
I was never dealt with it in my family or on my wife's side of the family. I did rely a lot on my parents. My dad is a marriage and family psychologist, counselor. So I relied a lot on him and his background on how things needed to change and what needed to change, and it was very helpful.
But in terms of the disease, you didn't have anything to fall back on with regard to that?
No, not until I started getting a little more active in her recovery, started to go to a few open meetings with her. Actually, I would take her to meetings. She would be drunk and drop her off in the seat, and then I would sit there and listen. That's really when I got the whole disease thing, was sitting in an AA meeting and looking at all these people and what they're struggling and what truly is going on in their lives.
So you got it before she did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brad Pfeffer is our guest. His wife abused alcohol for 10 years of their marriage. She is now how long sober?
Just over 3 years.
Over 3 years. And Brad is very active at retreat with their parent support group. Addiction, the family disease, on Recovery Radio. Don't go away. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. We'll get back to our guest straight ahead, but I want to remind you, do this every week so that you understand what we're talking about here. Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers, they pay the freight here. They're the sponsor of the program. But as I've told you many, many times, and it bears repeating, that doesn't mean we're just about selling what they do. This program is dedicated to informing people about the disease of addiction. So when we give you the phone number for Retreat, use it for questions or comments about anything concerning the disease of addiction. Now, having said that, they are renowned for the services they can provide. So you could do no better than that. Nevertheless, the number is given to you in the spirit of information. So, and we hope you never have to use it, frankly. 855-859-8808. Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. Again, 855-859-8808. Brad Pfeffer has been our guest discussing with us the crucible that his family has been through with the disease of addiction. Brad's wife struggled with drugs and alcohol for 10 years. They have come out the other side with a solid foundation and lots of sobriety. We congratulate them for that. Brad, before we went away, we're talking about the second time your wife went into treatment, your sort of initial resistance to that notion, thinking she knows what she has to do, she should just get ahead and doing it. You finally decided, well, she does need more help. You also mentioned something about getting getting more actively involved in her treatment. Explain a little bit about that. What does that mean?
Getting more actively involved would be me getting involved in my own treatment so that I can get healthy as she's getting healthy, and we can work together as a married couple to both get healthy to fight the disease. Also getting involved is learning more about the disease of addiction.
Let's take a moment about that, because a lot of people can't appreciate that. They think if the disease is in their lives and they can see the effects of it, they know a lot about it. You really do have to get up to speed on what addiction is, correct?
Yeah. I learned a lot through going to AA meetings with her and seeing the people in AA and people talking about it and their stories, hearing their stories of what they've gone through and how they had to recover. And you don't realize until you hear these stories from an outside perspective of how powerful this disease is over the person that has it.
Yeah. So this second time in, when your wife's in treatment again, and you're getting more involved in the process, what about the rest of the family? Were there family sessions that you all went to? How does that work?
There was we had our family session up here, which was a 4-hour session, which they did a nice job informing us of the disease of addiction. And then I went to the group. That's where I learned about the group that we have here every Thursday night, which was a big step for me to get out and see that I wasn't the only one here.
Yeah. The group you're referring to, that's just family members of people in recovery?
Yes.
Does your wife ever go to any of those meetings with you?
No. My wife doesn't go with me. She actually spoke at that meeting a few weeks ago, which was a great great experience, I think, for the group to understand what you go through. You have so many questions. You hear so many stories of failure and relapse, and you don't understand why it continues to happen. You don't understand that portion of the disease. And to hear something, a story that was positive, not only her, but another person came in to speak too a few weeks ago, and another positive story, I think that's important for us as a family to hear.
You mentioned that among the many things you have to do as a family member struggling with this in your life is to educate yourself on the nature of the problem. But the other thing I know that is important is that managing your expectations. Talk a little bit about that, because now you've come your second time in. you could feel a lot of different ways. You could have a lot of different expectations. What were some of the things you were thinking about?
Some of the expectations, you know, you think when they come out of treatment, they're going to be cured. And that's an expectation that I had to realize it wasn't a simple cure. This is something that she's going to fight the rest of her life. Other different expectations that I needed to have was getting healthy myself, and her getting healthy. And that's tough to look at, from both sides until you really sit down and do it. You always have that expectation of them not going to use again, but always in the back of your head, there is that expectation.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the dark side of that expectation. How difficult or how often did you have to fight the kind of defeatist notion that this, well, she relapsed once, she's going to relapse again? That's another expectation that can mess things up, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, she's sober, 3 years now. There's still times that creep up that in my own head, if she's going to the grocery store and runs 25, 30 minutes later than normal, what happened? Did the shoe finally drop, basically?
Talk about that a little bit. I mean, do you guys manage that situation by acknowledging that it exists? So, in other words, if she knows that she's going to be late, does she make the effort to text you, go, you know, got hung up in traffic or something? Does that process go on?
Yeah. We communicate very well, I think, in that
better
aspect.
Better now?
Oh, a lot better. A lot better than before. We communicate that a lot better, that there was something that created it other than her disease, you know?
Well, talk a little bit about communication, because in any family, even healthy, happy families, there's a lot of secrets and there's a lot of things not said out loud. What's the point? That's got to go away in the situation where addiction has descended, right?
Oh, yeah, it has to. You have to learn to discuss your feelings, how you felt, what happened in the past, talk about that past and get it all out on the table, because you're not going to heal if you don't do that. She's not going to heal. I'm not going to heal. You know, I heard one time in a meeting that expectations are premeditated resentments.
You're right. And the minute you don't meet them, right?
Yeah, and that really resonated with me, with her, as she was getting healthier or getting better, my expectations grew that things would be back to normal. That took time.
Yeah. You know? So obviously the goal of all this is your wife's sobriety. But how would you characterize your marriage today as opposed to what it was in, you know, several years ago? I mean, without regard to the abuse, is it stronger today, do you think, or is it different?
It's a lot stronger today. Our marriage is stronger than it ever been. And that goes back to both of us getting healthy, getting help, going to meetings, going to groups, and her willingness to just say, I have an issue, I have a problem, and this is the life I need to live to stay healthy.
Yeah. Is there any doubt in her mind or your mind that her continued success is a family affair, that it probably couldn't occur if all hands were not on deck? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think with her success, obviously a lot of the success has to come from the willingness of the addict or her willing to work at the steps, doing the programs, doing the things that she needs to do. But I think in supporting in the correct way, not trying to run her recovery,
right,
but just supporting her in the right way, family members, that's huge. It's huge for them.
Do you remember, was there a moment when you could tell that she was the light was beginning to go on for her?
Yeah, I could tell when she came out of rehab. She luckily got a chance to stay 37 days. Openly admit, I wasn't happy about the extra 7 days because I wanted her home.
Mm-hmm.
When she came out of the retreat this time, you know, you could tell there was a difference. There was a difference that she finally got what she needed to do.
And before we take this final break here now, while this process is going on, how important was it for you to let everybody in your life who needed to know what was going on? I mean, were you candid with your employer? Did your neighbors understand what was going on? Obviously, your extended family did, but is it important to let people know what's going on?
Oh, I think it's very important. I think it's important not only for her, but was important for me. I go back to when she was in rehab. I was invited to a wedding, and I ran into my third grade teacher at this wedding, and I haven't seen her since third grade. And we started talking, and she was asking about my wife, and I let her know what was going on. And it was funny. She had a stepson in the same situation. Within 15 to 20 minutes, there was eight people around that table talking about their family. I think that's a big step for anybody to get healthy and the family to get healthy because you're able to talk about it.
Yeah, there's a growing – I mean, we all understand the certainly with regard to AA – the anonymity factor and how important that has been historically, but there's a growing sense that you just have to talk about what's going on if it's in your life, and I think your situation is very common. Suddenly, everybody knows somebody who's in this situation. Welcome back. Our guest in the on the program has been Brad Peffer. Brad is active in retreats, parent support group. These are family members of people who are in recovery or have successfully maintained sobriety. We're going to find out more about what goes on in those groups. I want to thank you now, Brad. We're very appreciative of people who can come in and talk with candor about the problems in their life. It's a devastating disease. I don't have to tell you about it. How are the kids? How have they held up during this? This has happened had a very vulnerable age for them, right?
Yeah, the kids, Fran actually lost one of her daughters. Her ex-husband lives in Michigan, and she decided at one point in time it was time to go live with Dad, which was a very hard decision for her. Also a very hard time for Fran. Her oldest daughter stayed here in PA with us. But they watched their mom struggle for years and years and are very proud of who she's become. And how this disease has really changed her for the better when she got sober.
It's perfectly understandable why you would have gotten involved in the family support stuff at the beginning of this thing. But your wife's been successfully sober for a long time. It's very important she maintains, you know, her sobriety and working towards that. Because as we know, this is not a 28-day fix. This is a process. But why are you still involved?
I stay involved because it helps me remember what I need to do to stay healthy. We always hear, you know, when we're healthy, things will be better. And that is true. To come here and not just talk about the disease or what's going on, maybe just to have a hand out to somebody that's going through it, that's fresh, their child or loved ones in recovery, and they don't know where to turn, and be able to help them as the group helped me at the beginning is why I keep coming back.
What is it you would tell somebody who's listening now who's thinking, I don't know where to turn, I don't know the first move to make? What would you tell that person?
I would tell them to try and find an Al-Anon group, go sit in a meeting, listen, and just hear people talk.
Do you go to Al-Anon?
From time to time, I do.
Yeah. Are you working on yourself now as well as your family's well-being?
Yes. Yeah. Over the past 3 years, I've learned to do a lot of work on myself and look at myself for my shortcomings and things that I've have to change in my life. I think that's a lot of what's helped Fran and my marriage is both of us looking at each ourselves and saying we need to change here in this aspect of our lives.
With regard to the marriage, it's difficult. Marriage is a tough proposition under the best of circumstances. This disease is not that. It's the worst of circumstances. How does a couple like you and your wife, how do you put the past behind you? I mean, yes, sobriety, it's wonderful, and that's the goal. And now, you know, there's no more danger from that. But all that stuff happened. How does one put that behind them?
You know, going to meetings with my wife, to AA meetings, and dealing with some people in AA who have really helped both of us, and learning to just accept it as the past, was the way we got through it.
Does it ever come up? Is it ever a factor in your lives?
There are times that it does come up in our lives. There's times that you know, there's things we can't do. We can't be that couple to go to every picnic, every party. I try to support Fran in the best way. If she's uncomfortable, if we go to a picnic or somewhere that there's alcohol and those types of things, if it's time to leave, it's time to leave.
Yeah, yeah. What about rebuilding trust?
That takes time. Took me, with the second time in rehab, quite a few months to rebuild trust with her, with where you're going, what are you doing, those types
right.
of things.
And that behavior, I'm guessing, does not come out of a mean-spirited place. Is your guard up? Is that why it's hard to build trust back? You don't want to get sucker punched again?
Yeah, your guard is up. Yeah, your guard's up. You don't want to have to go through this. My wife and I, we're very open about it. We have a contract that if she relapses again, that's it.
Tell me, what do you mean a contract? You mean an actual contract?
Yeah, we have a contract that if she decides to use or drink again, that we have to go our separate ways, because I can't go through the mental and physical demands of this again. And we never really talk about that much, but it's there. It's a line in the sand, and I think that's what.
Are you convinced that if heaven forbid this contract is violated by your wife's behavior, that you're out of there?
Yeah, I have to do that for my well-being, and I think that's the biggest thing I had to learn in this whole process of recovery on myself is I can never control what she's going to do. If she wants to drink or use, she's thought about that weeks ago. I have to look at myself and make sure that I'm okay.
So finally, this family group, how often do you go to your family group? How often do you try to get there?
I try to get here every Thursday night.
Yeah. To somebody's out there and the problem hasn't reached crisis point yet, but it's going that way. Are they invited to come to a meeting like this and just sit in the back and see what's going on?
Yeah. Yeah, they're always welcome. We always welcome newcomers. It's a great group of people. We have a consistent group of people currently that have been there. We have quite a few people have been there going on a year, some 9 months, some 6 months. You know, it's almost like everybody's there for everybody in this group, and we always welcome newcomers to come in.
Well, thanks so much for the story. I mean, I can hear it in your voice that things are obviously better now. Did you ever think you'd get your life and your family back to this point?
No. Now, if it wasn't for her recovery and wasn't for the recovery community, retreat, giving her the tools that she needed and the people that were in her life, not just me and family, but people in the recovery community in Lancaster County, I don't think this would have been possible.
Brad, congratulations for the success of your wife and your family, and thanks for sharing that story with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And you guys, thanks for your time. Please look for us on Saturdays, Recovery Radio. Take care. Bye-bye.
This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.